is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, April 8th, and today will be better than yesterday. Taylor Schwenk is in the Schwenk Studios trying to keep Dolly, his dog, from eating Lola's pacifiers. We're going to have to talk about that situation later in the podcast. I'm Buster Olney in Arlington, where we just saw Ronel Blanco flirt with being the first guy since Johnny Vandermeer to throw back-to-back no-hitters. I'll be talking about that with Eduardo Perez coming up. But today, Monday the 8th, is the 50th anniversary of Henry Aaron's 715th home run, the home run he hit to break Babe Ruth's record.
One ball and no strikes. Aaron waiting, the outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone.
Yeah, and when that happened, Vince Scully planned, as soon as he called the home run, that he just leaned back from the microphone and let the crowd tell you the rest of that story. I was 10 years old when that happened. As I've said on the podcast before, we didn't have a television. No one else in my family liked sports. But my wonderful late mom left me a note in the morning. So I came down the next day, and it was a note from her that said, Henry Aaron hit his 715th home run, and the crowd cheered. And that's what Vince Scully was laying out for in that moment. So quite a moment in baseball history. Some really bad moments in baseball over the weekend, because we got so much bad injury news. Braves ace Spencer Strider has UCL damage in his right elbow. He's going to be out for an extended period. They're going to wait to see if they need more information about whether or not Strider is going to be able to pitch this year. Guardians ace Shane Bieber will not pitch again this year. He's set for Tommy John surgery. He came out of his last start with some discomfort. They checked it out, and he's done for the year. Yankees reliever Jonathan Loaisiga is going to have Tommy John surgery. He came out of his last appearance to throw 95 miles per hour, but after he was examined, they determined he's going to be out for the rest of the season. Josh Spores at the Texas Rangers, so important to their bullpen last year. He's got a strained rotator cuff. That's a little bit more positive in terms of what the outlook for him is to come back. Now, with all this information coming out about injuries, the head of the Baseball Player Association, Tony Clark, put out a statement basically tying these pitching injuries to the advent of the pitch clock in 2023. The quote from the statement, despite unanimous player opposition and significant concerns regarding health and safety, the commissioner's office reduced the length of the pitch clock last December, just one season removed from imposing the most significant rule change in decades. I've got strong feelings about that. And about how Major League Baseball should respond. Just terrible. The fact that we just cannot have any collaboration, it seems like, between the players' union leadership and Major League Baseball in trying to fix this awful issue with injuries. A pitcher who suffered a lot of injuries in his career, Steven Strasburg, has officially retired. If you remember, he signed a huge contract after the Nationals won the World Series in 2019. In which he played a major role, and he threw about 50 innings with that contract, and now he has retired. Justin Verlander is coming back from an injury. He allowed 6 runs and struck out 6 over 3 innings. The most important number, he was clocked his fastball at 95 miles per hour on Sunday. The Red Sox placed Trevor Story on the 10-day injury list with a dislocated shoulder. Here's what it sounded like as he was looking to make a play, diving for a ball on Friday night.
Hot shot. Diving play by Story, but he cannot.
Oh, no.
Oh, he's in pain here. He is writhing in agony and had a hand on his shoulder. He made a sensational stop on it. He was not going to get an out. And landed on that shoulder, apparently.
Story spoke to the reporters on Sunday. He's going to be examined on Monday. Then the Red Sox will find out more information about how much time he might miss. The Yankees moved the starting time of Monday's game because of the solar eclipse. They initially were supposed to host the Marlins at 2:05 p.m., but now they're starting at 6 o'clock. Taylor, where are you going to see the solar eclipse?
I guess I think where I live in Connecticut, I'm in a path of 90% totality. So I guess I'll go outside and check it out. I need some glasses, although the former president stared at it right, you know, unprotected, and he's fine. So maybe I'll just do that. That seems good.
I kind of wish that I could be in a place to see it. It's really cool, but I'm going to be on a plane. I'm hoping I'm on the right side of the plane as I fly back to Montana, because I think that's going to give me the best shot. Hot Ticket is brought to you by Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN. Get great deals on the hottest tickets, experience it live. And the crowd in at Globe Life Field on Sunday night was excellent. The ballpark was absolutely filled for the third game of the series between the Astros and the Rangers. The Rangers blew out Houston in the first two games. Well, in the top of the third inning, Yordan Alvarez gave Blanco a big lead.
Dunning delivers, and Alvarez crushes one to right. Hooking toward the corner. Gone, home run. Crushes a cutter into the right field bleachers about 10 feet fair. And Yordan Alvarez, his third home run of the season, and a three-run shot lands about 10 rows up into the bleachers. And it's 3-0 Astros.
Roxy Bernstein on ESPN Radio with that call. So Blanco was no hitting the Rangers through three innings, through four, through five. Here's the sound in the bottom of the fourth.
Again, the 3-2 to Carter. Swing and a bouncer to second base. Fielded on the edge of the outfield grass by Altuve. And he throws out Carter, a 1-2-3 inning for Blanco. So now 13 consecutive no-hit innings.
But he finally allowed a hit in the sixth inning. It was Adolis Garcia with a single, and that ended 1 2/3 games, essentially, of no-hit baseball. The Astros turned the 3-1 lead over to the bullpen. Josh Hader was on the mound for this.
Made three starts for Texas this year. Bouncer to third, could be two. Gobbled up by Bregman. To second, Altuve the turn. Two, double played, and the ball game.
And the two teams will play the fourth game of the series on Monday. The Marlins and the Cardinals. The Marlins finally won a game on Sunday.
As Andrés comes set, the 0-2 pitch is swung on it, missed strike three, and there it is. The Miami Marlins are into the win column for the first time in 2024. Max Meyer collects his first major league victory this afternoon.
And from 940 WINZ, the Cubs off to a good start. Cody Bellinger went deep for Chicago in the bottom of the sixth.
Bellinger drills one in the air, deep right field, down the line, hooking. That ball is gone for a home run. Or is it off the wall? Is it off the wall? It's a home run. That's what I saw, and that's what it is. A home run for Cody Bellinger.
And the Cubs beat the Dodgers 8-1. Shota Imanaga was excellent again, throwing four shutout innings against that potent Dodger lineup. The Pirates in the Orioles. Taylor, cover your ears. This is what happened in the ninth inning.
2-2 pitch, swing and a bouncer over the mound towards short. Henderson dives, throws wildly. The out at second recorded. The runs come across for the Pirates. That throwing error will win it for the Buccos. For the second straight day, the Buccos walk off winners over the Orioles.
Yeah, Gunnar Henderson with that throwing error. That from Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan. Yankees, Blue Jays. The Yankees, a lot of buzz going into the weekend about Giancarlo Stanton, who had struggled. Well, he homered on Saturday, and this is what he did on Sunday.
2-2. Deep to left field. There it goes. See ya. A grand slam for Stanton. Oh, what a shot. And 5-1 Yankees.
Michael Kay on the Yes Network. Yankees win 8-3. We'll be talking with Jorge Castillo about the Yankees' solid start. The Brewers face the Mariners. William Contreras had himself a day.
1-2 pitch. Hammered a deep left. Way back and gone. William Contreras' first of the year. 6-2 Brewers on a missile by Contreras.
Yeah, so National League Central standings, the Pirates are 8-2 in first place. You got the Brewers in second place with a 6-2 record. Both those teams off to good starts. Taylor, what else you got?
Buster, a new episode of the College Game Day podcast is out. Reese Davis, Pete Thamel, and Jeff Borzello, big three right there, breaking down the men's Final Four games. It should be a pretty good matchup on Monday night. They're going to do a recap show probably on Tuesday. They'll do a college football show as well. So they're busy boys over there. Check it out, the College Game Day podcast. You can watch it on YouTube or listen on this platform.
All right, another clown car edition, but this is actually a conversation we're having on our walk back to the hotel from the ballpark. We're walking through the upper concourse here at Globe Life Field, and I'm talking with Eduardo Perez, who did such a great job talking to Ronel Blanco, who showed us in a second start, Eduardo. This might be for real.
It might be. That's something that we were wondering today, can he be able to repeat what he did on April 1st at home? And he was really good. And the thing is this, last time he threw 36 changeups, and it was a higher percentage of changeups than sliders or fastballs. And today it was 50% fastballs. He was a different pitcher. 17% of those pitches were sliders, and the rest were changeups. He threw the curveball a couple times in the game, but he's gaining confidence, and that's one of the things that I asked him after the game. And I think he will continue to gain that confidence. And when a pitcher is on the mound, and that's one thing that I asked Coney, is he goes, it's all about the confidence. It's all about the conviction in the pitches. And he showed that he can throw any pitch at any time, and that's what got the Texas Rangers off balance tonight.
So he has a good game, but in some respects, I mean, and obviously if the Astros now, you're thinking, oh boy, we might have a starter who's going to be in the rotation the whole year. But to me, if you're on the Astros side, you're also really, really happy that your bullpen got through the innings.
Yeah, definitely really happy that your bullpen got through the innings. You got Montero with the changeup. You have got one out, and Presley, they needed that inning, a 1-2-3 inning from Presley. I thought that was huge. And then Hader comes in and allows one run, but able to get the save. Look, the strength of Joe Espada's team is going to be that bullpen. Coming into the season, that's what we broke down. It was the bullpen of the Houston Astros, and one of the big reasons that they were going to be so competitive in this division was because of the strength of that pen.
So what are your takeaways after the first two times we've seen the Texas Rangers?
They're going to hit. Even if they did not and only got two hits in the game, they're going to be very competitive. They're young. They're going to go through their growing pains. But I think they're in a better position now than they were last year. What Dane Dunning showed us today was he can keep and give his team a chance at competing throughout. So I think that's one of the big things moving forward, and I think it's going to be a challenge for a lot of teams having to play against a team like the Texas Rangers.
Boy, Jose Altuve was impressive, huh, this weekend. I mean, he looks like he hasn't missed a beat now that he's got this contract locked in pretty much through the rest of his career.
He really does, and you know, it's the work that he puts in the offseason. He looks better and better every year physically. That was the big question when he first signed professionally, is he going to be able, is that body going to be able to hold? He understands what he has to put into it in order to be successful throughout the entire season. And for the Astros to continue to compete, Jose Altuve has to do and lead that way.
You know, it's interesting, too, when I asked him the question about, 3,000 hits. We had a great conversation about it on Saturday. We really wish I would have taped it because he was very open about what that number means to him and the possibility of getting it. You know, hitting far better than I do. What was pretty clear from my conversation with him is that his questions are whether or not he can stay healthy. He has no doubt in his mind he can keep hitting into his late 30s.
I believe so. I think the bat-to-ball skill's there. I think he knows what he has to do to stay at that. And look, he puts the work in, and you can tell. Now, a lot of the questions were asked, will he be able to do that consistently year after year? I think he's answered all the naysayers when it comes to that.
Okay. Hey, Eduardo. Good job,
hey,
guys.
What's going on? So let's get away from the series for a second. First off, the impact of all these injuries. Start off with Spencer Strider, out indefinitely for the Braves.
Yeah, this is scary for the Atlanta Braves. It's a team that's deep. It's a team that's invested a lot, not only in Strider, but then, you know, you have Chris Sale that has to now stay healthy consistently. Max Fried, who are we going to get from him? This is his walk year. This is going to be really interesting. And then, you know, Charlie Morton, the same veteran guy that has to be able to take that ball. You know, the Strider thing, the Braves are going to have to hit. They're going to have to continue to play great defense as well and compete. But it's a big hit for them because that's their number one guy right now.
And if it winds up that he needs a Tommy John surgery, that would be his second in the last 5 years. And so there'd be some open questions. I had one executive say to me, it's not only the question for this year, but it's a question for the Braves for next year. After potentially Charlie Morton leaves the team, he's on a one-year deal. When Max Fried leaves as a free agent, so we'll see. I felt terrible for Shane Bieber and the Guardians, who have had this really very quiet, quietly great start to their season, and now to get this news, devastating.
It's huge. You know, this is a guy that went out to Kent, Washington, again to Driveline, increased his velocity by 1.5 miles per hour, put the work in the offseason, and then he breaks down after the first game, man. You know, this one's it's a tough one for the Guardians. It's a guy that if the Guardians weren't in it at one point, most likely would have been a great trade piece to be able to acquire great talent as well. So this one's going to hurt the Guardians in many ways, and it's going to affect them not only for this year, but I think for the years to come as well.
So Trevor Story will be examined in Boston on Monday. You'll get more information about his injury, but look, a left shoulder injury for a right-handed hitter, that's a situation where, I mean, and I'm not a doctor, but I know my experience talking with players who dealt with shoulder issues, if he doesn't get surgery, it's going to be loose, which means that potentially it's going to be a question moving forward. And if he does get surgery, he's going to be out for a long time. Devastating loss for them, especially after seeing Story early this year.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And Buster, I had pretty much almost the same surgery with my left shoulder, dove for a ball over my head in winter ball, and ended up having to have three tacks put into my shoulder. It takes a while. It took me at least, I want to say, 24 months to feel healthy at 100% again. We've seen a lot of players have shoulder injuries where they end up struggling at some time because of it, and it changes their swing path. It changes their aggressiveness. We've seen Fernando Tatis Jr. at one point have his left shoulder issues as well. It's a tough injury, and it's a tough break for Trevor Story and the Boston Red Sox, a guy who is one of those leaders in that clubhouse, and you could tell that he was taking that team and making sure that they were going to stay focused day in and day out. So it's a tough break for the Red Sox.
Boy, I got to say, these fans have been great and very respectful of us having this conversation. We're passing. I've seen a couple of them look at you like, oh, my God, that's Eduardo. And yet, you know what? We can go on and have this conversation. Last one for you. We had this back and forth on Saturday with press releases being put out, first by the Player Association, Tony Clark. Major League Baseball answers back. Tony Clark essentially placing the blame of all these injuries on the pitch clock. What did you make of that back and forth?
Teams are looking for power. They're looking for power with the bat. They've always been looking for power with the pitching. I think everyone has to share the blame a little bit here. You know, it's the science. We have to follow the science on this one. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of track record. We've seen a lot of numbers trend up. We've seen even the changeup trend up in velocity. The fastball, the two-seamer trend up in velocity. The slider, the same thing. We've looked for the power. We've looked for the strikeouts. And that's the unfortunate part, that we're losing a lot of our star players. In these cases, it's been the star pitchers. It's hard as a fan. It's hard as a broadcaster. It's hard as a player to be able to see that on a nightly basis. But on a pretty much almost on a weekly basis, we're seeing injuries here and there. Some say that it's part of the game. How do we regulate it? Do we put more time on there? But we've seen a lot of injuries the last 2 days, yes. But the last 2 years, yes. But we've seen a lot of injuries in the last 5 years as well. I think that's the tough part about this, Buster.
Yeah, in fact, there were more pitchers put on the IL in 2022, the year before the pitch clock went into effect, than in 2023, the first year of the pitch clock. I thought the statement was just disingenuous from Tony Clark. He knows it's more complicated than that. There's so much information about velocity and spin and the chase for that with teams. And when he used the word unanimous about the players, belief, unanimous against the pitch clock, I was like, that's simply not true. I've had so many conversations with players where they really like the pitch clock. And pitchers I've spoken to on the podcast, with Zach Eflin, and we had Rich Hill, who believed that, yes, they could see the pitch clock contributing to the injuries. But also, Zach Eflin in particular is like, you know what? I really like the pitch clock.
I think one thing that the players learned this year that they did not know last year going in is how to train for this. And I think in the offseason, the pitchers are going to have to train a little bit faster with their times and their reps to be able to get used to what the clock is. Did it get shaven down to 2 seconds now from 20 to 18 with no runners on? Yes. But I think a lot of managers have said they're not concerned with the pitch after pitch. They're concerned with the long innings. After 20 pitches in an inning, should the pitch clock go down to maybe give you 2 extra seconds on the clock? Will that make a difference? Maybe we don't. Maybe yes, maybe no, but we don't know. And I think that's the scary part about this. We have to protect the players, the game, the brand.
And I think also it would really help if there were a collaborative relationship between Major League Baseball and the Player Association. Part of the feedback that we got on the podcast earlier this year is that a lot of pitchers would like, one timeout per outing or two or three or something where they can get a breather in those moments. And, that's something I think Major League Baseball has to hear and potentially react to. So anyway, that'll be a conversation that I'm sure will continue as we move forward. Eduardo, thank you.
You got it. First edition of the Clown Walk. This is pretty cool.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. Sarah, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing great. So we do a Sunday night game like this, okay? And there are no other games to be played, which means that you have no baseball to watch. How long does it take you to come down from the adrenaline of working on a game like this?
Oh my gosh. I mean, what a great game. I mean, absolutely. After the game, I'm still sitting here trying to think through what angles might I miss? What else do we need to know about Ronald Blanco, about the Astros? The fact that they have 3 wins, and each win they've allowed 2 or fewer hits. And every other game, if they've allowed 3 or more, and they've lost the game. And just kind of going through all of that. So I'm not down from all of that yet.
So you work for another hour and a half. You still going to be looking up stuff, thinking of different questions? Or are you just, sitting back, having, a bunch of beer and, falling asleep?
No, well, as we established, this is dinner time, so I'm eating dinner. quick game, so dinner time a bit earlier than last week at the very least. But doing that, I'll probably work for another hour, make sure I get the Sunday crossword finished, and then we'll see.
Unbelievable. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is 44, so speaking of that game, Ronald Blanco recorded 44 outs this season before allowing his first hit. That is the most consecutive outs before a first hit allowed by any pitcher to start a season at least the expansion era, which goes back to 1961. It's also the second longest streak by any pitcher at any point this season in Astros history. Behind only Mike Scott in 1986, he had a 51 consecutive out streak without allowing a hit.
Number two
is 21. So I think we talked about Garrett Crochet early in the year when he was named opening day starter. And I know this season is not going the way White Sox fans would have liked. But I want to give him a shout out. because I think a lot of people saw him named opening day starter, knew his history as a reliever and thought this was an opener, didn't know if he was fully built up. He's been so good. So the 21 is for 21 strikeouts so far this season. That time was Chris Sale for the most strikeouts in a pitcher's first three career starts with the White Sox in franchise history. By the way, Chris Sale, another guy for the White Sox, who started out as a reliever, bolted up to a starter, and then became really, really good. Well, I know not all sunshine on the South Side, but he has been so good.
Number one.
Number one is six. So the Braves on Saturday, I believe. No sense of time very well established on this podcast. On Saturday, they were trailing by six runs in the first inning and still came back to win that game against Arizona. Now, the Braves are one of those teams that has been around since 1876, going back all the way to the dawn of baseball history. This was only their fourth win in franchise history when they trailed by at least six in the first inning. They did it in October, on October 1st, 1991, against the Reds. They did it on July 16th, 1948, against the Cubs. And my favorite, they did it on May 31st, 1899, against the Cleveland Spiders.
Spiders, your favorite team that you never got to watch. All right, so as you were talking about Crochet, I was just going to tell you this. You met my son Jake when he was about 14 or 15 when he went up to ESPN. No, he must have been like 12 or 13, but he made his television debut, came up. We're doing a fantasy baseball team together, and I must say my early indication is it could turn out to be a disaster because we got a little Jerry Jones, Jimmy Johnson thing happening, okay? After the last start, he wanted to pick up Crochet, and I'm like, I don't know about the idea of picking up a White Sox pitcher because of the ballpark, a lot of home runs. So I'm thinking, Sarah, I might ask you to be a tiebreaker sometimes on these disputes we're having. Does that sound like a nice role for you? Are you willing to take that on?
I mean, it sounds terrifying to be a tiebreaker in a family dispute, but I'm Team Gear Crochet, so I am with Jake on that one. And if you have another dispute, you know, you can text me. I'll see what stats I can provide. But don't tell me who's on what side. I want to be totally objective and not just agree with you. So I need to not know who thinks you should get the guy and who thinks you shouldn't.
All right, last one. And I'm really, this is a totally unfair question. All of these injuries we've had in recent days, Trevor Story, Shane Bieber, Spores goes down, of course, Spencer Strider. In your eyes, which of these are going to have the greatest impact on their respective teams?
I mean, it's really, really hard because, as you said, these have been, quite a lot of them in a very short span. I think of the Braves and Strider off the bat because, you know, that comeback I mentioned, now with Max Fried yet again, two starts this season, struggling in the first inning. He did stay in the game after allowing the sixth in the first inning that came on Saturday and was able to settle down to a seven. When you look in the rotation, if he is maybe not at his past peak and Charlie Morton is older and so on and so forth, all of a sudden, I mean, you're taking a Cy Young contender as the rotation of a team that we all expected to win, no 105 game. But all of these are super impactful. My heart really breaks for AC and the Red Sox, who are off to such a great start, and Trevor Story having had injuries very similar to this before. I mean, the pain on his face when that happened.
I know.
It was so, so palpable. Sometimes guys are kind of so weak in the face of this. We know he knew what happened. And that is always so awful to me.
Yeah, And I think the Braves' impact, it's not only this year, but it's also in 2025, because, of course, Max Fried is a free agent when the year is over. Charlie Morton is at the age where, I mean, who knows if he comes re-signs for another year or if he decides to take it to the house. But if you're the Braves looking forward at your pitching, there definitely is some big concern. It's a team that has spent a lot of resources and graduated a lot of players into the big leagues in an effort to win in recent years. And it's going to be a challenge for them, that's for sure, if he's out for an extended period. Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Lester.
And I got to figure out how to, like, tilt the scales with the whole thing with Jake. You know, but I guess because I'm older, I'm the Jerry Johnson and he's the, you know, anyway, Jimmy Johnson and I'm Jerry Jones.
I love it. I can't wait to hear the first decision on the out block.
Jorge Castillo covers baseball for ESPN. Jorge, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Buster. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us late on a Sunday night after the Sunday night game. First off, we've had all this conversation about the injuries in recent days, and there's no doubt about it. It's a problem. One of the guys who went down in spring training was the guy who was considered basically to be the best pitcher on the planet, and Gerrit Cole. What's the latest on him?
Well, today, Aaron Boone, Sunday today, said that Gerrit Cole will be playing catch either tomorrow, Monday, or Tuesday. Obviously, a big step in the right direction for Cole, who's been shut down basically for a couple of weeks now since, you know, early to mid-March with that elbow inflammation, nerve inflammation in the elbow. So it's a big step. He's on the injured list until like late May. I don't expect him to be, you know, with the Yankees until, you know, at least June at the very least, but obviously a positive step, in the right direction. And, the Yankees off to a hot start. And I think I said it last time I was on here. If the Yankees get off to a hot start and they stay hot, you know, they don't have to rush Gerrit Cole back. So it'd be great if they don't have to do that. And, you know, so one step at a time with the, you know, reigning American Cy Young Award winner. And we'll see where he goes from there.
So when we have these conversations about Oakland and Tampa Bay ballpark, I have a rule for myself. It's not real until somebody puts a shovel in the ground. I kind of feel that way with pitchers on rehab, that we don't really know anything until they start throwing the hitters and ramping up the velocity, because that's when we'll find out whether or not the whatever's going on in the elbow is actually structurally sound moving forward. Does that make sense?
Oh, for sure. I mean, he can play catch. He can throw a bullpen. He can even some, you know, live BP. It's different once you get into a game, even, you know, rehab assignment stuff, getting into a, you know, a game where, you know, there's an opponent and all that. And Gerrit Cole obviously is very far from that. So just playing some catch, we don't know to the distance necessarily. Is he going to go out to, you know, 60 feet, 6 inches, whatever it is? It's just one step in the right direction, but he's still a ways away from pitching for the Yankees this year.
Over the weekend, Saturday, after all these injuries, you know, Shane Bieber, Tommy John surgeries, Spencer Strider goes down with an elbow injury. He's out indefinitely, et cetera, et cetera. We had dueling press releases, one from the Major League Baseball Player Association, Tony Clark, and then we had a response from Major League Baseball, no name actually attached to that one. What did you make first of what Clark said, and what did you think of Major League Baseball's response? What I said to Eduardo was, I thought that what Tony had in his release was disingenuous, because everybody knows that potentially this whole issue with injury is a lot more complicated than the pitch clock. And I also, when he used the word unanimous in terms of player opposition to the pitch clock, I've had so many conversations with players who love this. Tell me what your perspective is on that first.
I just, when I saw that statement, I was like, really, did the pitch clock, was that around in 2000, 2010? Like, what year was the pitch clock introduced? Because arm injuries have been an issue the last decade. I mean, our colleague, yeah, Jeff Passan, wrote a book about the arm long before the pitch clock was even implemented or even, you know, thought possible for Major League Baseball, right? So this really goes back. I mean, these conversations happen pretty much every day when we're at a ballpark or talking to somebody, right? Arm injuries, it's the biggest problem. One of the big problems in Major League Baseball, and to, you know, maybe the pitch clock doesn't help, you know, these guys are rushing more than they're used to or whatever, but there are so many, like you said, there are so many other factors. It's the the desire to just throw as hard as you can, the spin on the ball, the lack, frankly, I do wonder about the sticky stuff. You know, maybe the sticky stuff was helping maybe prevent guys from you know, maybe
having to overthrow.
Yeah, from overthrow and slips. You know, I think Tyler Glass now a couple of years ago when he was in Tampa was talking about that on a Zoom call. I actually watched that clip the other day. He was saying like he felt the first time he threw without like rosin and sun and sunscreen, he just his arm felt completely different after his outing. He didn't get hurt, but it just muscles he had never known were even there. That could be another factor. And frankly, these guys are throwing since they're like teenagers all year long as hard as they can because you don't get recruited unless you throw hard. You don't get drafted unless you throw hard. You don't make money or your bonus unless you throw hard. And when you're doing that, these kids are coming up having TJ in high school, in college. So many guys nowadays, like, yeah, first round pick, he dropped because he had Tommy John surgery and, you know, as a, you know, 20-year-old sophomore or whatever. Like, you hear that about that all the time. And this starts long before the pitch clock is even possible for these guys to deal with, you know? So, it's when I saw that statement, I was like, yeah, maybe the pitch clock doesn't help, but there are a million other factors. And it's with the way these guys are being incentivized, starting at a really young age, to throw the ball as hard as they can and spin the ball as much as they can.
Yeah. And I'll repeat the number that I said to Eduardo when we were walking together, that in 2022, there were more pitchers on the injured list than there were in 2023, the first year of the pitch clock, literally more arm injuries before the advent of the pitch clock. And I mentioned to Eduardo, too, that I mean, what would be great instead of dueling press releases is if they actually got into a room and collaboratively had the attitude of, look, we got to figure out a way to fix this thing. We have to figure out a way to try to reduce this. I do think that they need to restore the preeminence of starting pitchers and not have this mentality of basically running out eight sprinters who are going as hard as they can over the course of nine innings. But I just don't have a sense of any collaborative, you know, foundation to build on. What about you?
Yeah, it's just like you mentioned the eight sprinters thing. Those guys go out and throw hard. There's so many guys nowadays. You look up, they're throwing 98, 99, 100 miles an hour. 10 years ago, you'd be like, oh my God, now it's just kind of so like
whatever.
Customary. Yeah, it's like whatever. With a nasty slider or a sweeper that they're throwing nowadays. And, you know, I wish we did have that starting pitcher because, you know, growing up, that was the first thing you look for. Who is pitching this day? Is it, you know, who's on the mound? Pedro Martinez against, you know, whoever, Randy Johnson, whatever, you know, like the big starters, the big time.
A guy you covered, Kershaw.
Yeah, he was Kershaw.
Big name, Kershaw Bumgarner.
Exactly. Verlander, you know, that sort of a last of a dying breed with those guys. And, you know, I did wonder with this pitch clock. And, you know, maybe this happens when they start, you know, restricting the rosters a little bit further with, you know, the number of pitchers on a roster. You know, hey, a little more finesse. Maybe not going out and throwing as hard as you can from the first inning. You know, there were times back in the day, I remember, like, guys wouldn't come out and throw as hard as they can. They let it go maybe in the sixth, seventh inning. But then, you know, first couple innings, they're, you know, they're peppering the strike zone. They're getting quick outs. You know, they're pitching. Whereas that'd be great to see again. I feel like these guys just come out and just throw as hard as they can, and that's just going to lead to injuries. But that's the way these guys are incentivized, and that's the way just things have gone now for a decade. Until things are changed, and until I think some rules are imposed, and you know, maybe roster restrictions or whatever the case may be, these guys will not change. It's just the way it is. And you mentioned the eight sprinters. Again, back to that is you see these bullpens, and in a couple of years, those guys are hurt. You know, you hear about this guy getting hurt and that guy getting hurt, and then they just replace them because they find the other guys who come out and throw 98 miles an hour with a nasty slider or a nasty sweeper, and they just replace them. It's just churning and churning and churning. These guys aren't making it to ARB, never mind free agency. And it's just kind of, it's a cycle that's kind of happening right now. And it's a huge problem for Major League Baseball.
Yeah. And there's not only incentive, I think, for the players from injury standpoint, from a financial standpoint. They need to get more guys who have longer careers, who pitch longer. And if, you know, coming up with a rule, and it was Max Scherzer during the postseason last year mentioned the double hook idea where you tie the designated hitter to the, you know, to the use of a starting pitcher so that a manager, if he pulls the starting pitcher, then that also means that he loses the DH for the rest of the game. I thought that was an excellent way to get teams to think about getting starting pitchers go longer. And then I think they also just have to put a number in place. Like I said a few years ago, restrict each team with obvious exceptions to blowouts, or injuries to five pitchers per game. And that way the managers will feel like, you know what, I need to get through, you know, six innings because I want to go more matchup based in the last few innings, or however they do it. But you have to put something in. And I think that'll help with the injuries. And I think it'll help with the money that some of the starting pitchers, you know, would get going forward, because there'd be more value on that particular position. I wanted to ask you, you mentioned, we talked about the Yankees, you know, briefly with Gerrit Cole early on. What are you seeing in this team?
I'm seeing a team that, you know, if they stay healthy for the most part, I know DJ LeMay, he's not in a lineup right now. He's dealing with a non-displaced fracture in his right foot. But if these guys stay healthy, they're going to hit. And, you know, we saw it last night, Saturday night, the first inning, Juan Soto walks, Aaron Judge homers. It's not the last time we're going to see that. Giancarlo Stan homered last night. Today, Sunday, hit a grand slam. You know, Rizzo hit a home run yesterday. They got guys. Anthony Volpe is off to a great start. The adjustments he's made during the offseason, they're already really just evident. A flatter swing path, which is allowing him to be more patient. He's not as, you know, anxious maybe at the play, a little calmer. They're going to hit. Now, the question is, they ran into it this weekend a bit. The starting pitching, are they going to go long enough deep into games so the bullpen doesn't get taxed? Which could eventually, maybe right now is not a big issue. Maybe the bullpen can withstand it right now. But, you know, come May, June, the middle of the summer, is that bullpen going to get too taxed without Gerrit Cole around it to take down those innings? They need Carlos Rodon to go deep into games. Nestor Cortez, Marcus Stroman had, you know, he's been their best pitcher through two starts. They need guys to maybe, you know, go into the sixth, seventh inning a little more often. Where Clark Schmidt on Saturday, I think, went four, and, you know, we went to the fourth or fifth inning. Same thing with Luis Gil today. They need more innings out of their guys to avoid taxing that bullpen. But I think the Yankees, I said it from the jump, from the beginning, you know, before the season started, if that offense stays healthy, they're going to be at least, you know, vying for a wild card spot. They're just too good in that lineup. Now, if, that's a big if, it's a huge if. Anthony Rizzo's in his early 30s, Aaron Judge is in his early 30s, Giancarlo Stanton, those guys, it's an older team. LeMay, who's already hurt, but if they stay healthy, they're going to hit, they're going to mash. And if Gerrit Cole comes back healthy, and maybe he's not the guy from last year, but, you know, whatever percent of 90% of that or whatever, this team should, you know, should compete for a playoff spot.
What I think that they have to be, I mean, not only for the Yankees, but a lot of these contending teams who've had the arm injuries, they have to begin to have the process of, you know, start the process of thinking like, okay, who might be available? You know what? The list is going to be really short, and there's going to be unbelievable competition for a guy like Jesus Luzardo of the Marlins. You know, there's a lot of assumption he's going to be made available. Well, guess what? The Braves want him, and probably about 10 other teams who want him. The Yankees are going to want him. So it's going to be hard for, you know, the Yankees, the Braves, et cetera, to fill holes as the season goes along. Worst case scenario, I think, for the Mets with how they've started. What have you seen there?
Same thing. Francisco Lindor going 0 for 24 or whatever it was. And then, you know, obviously today he broke out of that homer. That's just worst case scenario. JD Martinez isn't around quite yet. That's actually going to be his debut is going to be delayed a little bit here. He's not going to join him until the homestand at the very least. Worst case scenario, Shaman Aya looks great. You know, one of their pickups during the offseason. But it can't get much worse than that start. And it's funny because that start happened with a couple like rainouts. So like here in New York, everyone's that more of an opportunity to really like hone in on the Mets and how terrible they look through, you know, four games, you know, which is what, not even a percent of this or 1% of the season. So, you know, think that between Nimmo and Lindor, those guys aren't going to look the way, you know, they've been looking. Yeah, Jeff McNeil. Those guys are going to hit soon. And once the offense gets going, the question becomes, you know, is the pitching enough? Is that starting pitching enough? So offensively, it's been terrible, but I think they'll turn it around here. And I mean, I don't think they're going to be world beaters or anything, but they're not going to be as bad as they were that, you know, that first week of the season.
Okay, last one. I want to ask you about a player situation, a clubhouse that you're very familiar with, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Last week, we had the story about Ohtani's first home run with the Dodgers going into the stands, and the two fans who are involved in that have talked out loud with and spoken to reporters about how they really felt they were, for lack of a better way to describe it, were bullied with the handling of what they've got in return for giving up the Ohtani home run. You know, the question of should there have been more, Ohtani in his press conference was quoted through an interpreter as indicating that he had spoken with the fans when that didn't actually take place. I don't want to get into adjudicating that whole situation, but man, it's been rocky for Ohtani starting out with the Dodgers. It feels like between the everything that went on with Ipe Mitsuhara to some grumblings about Ohtani's availability to the media. And by the way, that's not coming from the media members. And this whole thing with the ball, what do you make of this early transition, which feels rocky to me?
It's been super rocky. And, you know, the Dodgers obviously playing really well through it. And it's interesting because Ohtani the other day hits his first home run. And after the game, he said he was pressing. He's like, I was trying to hit a home run, which is super interesting coming from someone like him, a superstar. Usually they're not that open about, pressing. And I do wonder if things are, if it's, you know, necessarily the transition being rocky or just like him transitioning to a new team period, it just, you know, it's different. The thing is with Shohei Ohtani is he got away with a lot with the Angels. That's just the way it is. He did not have to talk to the media when he didn't want to. He never talked to the media when he didn't pitch. He could have hit four home runs in a game. It didn't matter. He did not talk to the media. And I know for a fact, from what I've heard, you know, his availability has been an issue. Guys have been grumbling a little bit.
The Among media, the players, to make it
yes,
clear.
Yes, the players. The amount of media in the clubhouse has been an issue, at Dodger Stadium with players. Obviously, the Ipe situation, that is such a crazy, surreal. I still can't believe it. Like, when I read a story, I'm like, I saw this guy the last 6 years, and Ipe was like his sidekick. I mean, that was his guy. And, like, I still can't really... When I read this, I can't believe that it's like it actually happened. And then the whole LeBall situation, again, we don't want to go through that too much, but it just seems like there's always, like, so far, it's been, we're a week into the season. We're really like 3-4 months into his time as a Dodger, 5 months. And it just seems like something's always kind of coming up so far. Maybe it's just smooths out from here. Everything gets, a little calmer. But it's not the type of transition you want, obviously. And like I said, the Dodgers, they're going to be fine. They're going to win games. They're already off to a great start. The offense is great. You know, the pitching staff is great. So they'll be fine on the field. But yeah, off the field, it's been a weird, weird start. And I don't know, maybe it's just more attention on the Dodgers than the Angels. Maybe it's, a guy just dealing with some bad luck, right? The whole interpreter thing that happened the other day in terms of, whether he saw the fans or not, there's an, Dylan Hernandez, who covers who's a columnist at the Los Angeles Times, speaks fluent Japanese. And he was tweeting that like, hey, it was hard under, it's easy to say, to think or to come away from that thinking that Ohtani said that he met the fans, but he didn't. And it's just a whole complicated situation. Maybe just, a lot of bad, stuff happening at once. So maybe this all, blows away here soon. But it's been a weird, rocky start, like you said. And the Dodgers are going to keep winning because that's what the Dodgers do.
I know, because they're going to score a million runs. And, Dave Roberts talked to us last week about how he feels like that Ohtani, generally speaking, compartmentalizes, which is probably what he's going to have to do. And I try to make this point to, fans that listen to this or, fans I talk to. When I, talk about a player not talking to the media, I'm not complaining personally. Like, I never cared. If a player said, I don't want to talk to you, I'm like, that's fine. I'm going to go talk to these other players. It's so important to other players for guys to talk. It becomes a big deal when you get a player who won't talk because other players are like, great. So I get questions about Jorge Castillo, or Buster Olney. In other words, if we were a teammate and I have to answer those questions and they don't like that. They want players to speak for themselves and they will say things. And I've had players come up to me, after, especially with young players, when it involves a young starting pitcher comes up, gets his butt kicked. And I'll have a veteran come up to me and said, hey, did he talk to you guys? Oh, he did. Okay, good. Like they think it's important to be accountable in those moments. So when we talk about this, it's not me and you whining about whether or not Ohtani is talking. It's about a cultural issue within a clubhouse. Was that your experience?
1,000%. And it's so different with Ohtani because it's not just like the 5 beat reporters looking to speak to Ohtani. It is like 40 reporters looking to speak with Ohtani. So if Ohtani doesn't talk that day, that means 40 reporters, or, you know, maybe it's not 40, maybe it's 20 in the clubhouse. They're all going to X player to ask about Ohtani, to ask about, you know, what did you think of Ohtani's, you know, second at bat? Like, because they want to know every detail, because people are there to cover Ohtani. It's actually funny because, you know, Yamamoto is a huge, huge deal, like $325 million contract, richest contract in, for a pitcher, right? So you would think the Japanese media, they want as much Yamamoto as they can as well. I remember I was there at Dodger camp for the first 5 days. And by like the first week, the Dodgers were like, hey, you guys want to talk to Yamamoto? And they're like, they were there for Ohtani. They weren't there for Yamamoto. They're there for Ohtani. And Ohtani, when he doesn't talk, it just leads to these other guys having to answer questions, which means they can't leave and go home. You know, especially, you know, after games, like, you know, these games end at like 10, 11 o'clock. They want to go home. They don't want to answer questions, you know, about a guy who doesn't want to talk to the media. So that stuff is very real. It's not, you know, we're not here complaining. If you don't want to talk, fine, man. Don't talk. It's okay.
I never cared. It never bothered me.
Exactly. But that's very real. That is very real. Guys do not want to waste their time talking about other people every single day because the guy doesn't want to talk. And, you know, I think it's been a little different with the Dodgers than it was with the Angels. He got away with a lot with the Angels. But you're not going to get away with as much with the spotlight of playing for the Dodgers and having Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and those guys in that clubhouse. It's just different.
All right, Jorge. Thanks for doing this. Always great to talk.
Thank you.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Monday.
No, we're not going to get the Bleacher Tweets yet. I got to hear about your dog, Dolly. And apparently an obsession with Lola's pacifiers. That is an issue when you got a dog making moves on pacifiers.
Yeah, I like to keep you in the know about Dolly's whereabouts. I know you're fascinated by her. She's a strange little animal, and she loves her little sister Lola. She's very gentle with her, is determined to lick her face. But if she cannot do that, she is on the hunt at all times for a stray pacifier. She knows where they are, so even if they're not there, she knows where to sniff. And I was out watching the UConn game with some buddies on Saturday night, and my wife sent me a picture of Dolly with the pacifier in her mouth like a baby, like in her mouth correctly, not just chewing on the whole thing, like sucking on it like a small child. So I'll put that up on X and Instagram. It was pretty funny. It was slayed me.
All right. So this is a question with no judgment attached whatsoever. What is the parent philosophy for the two of you when it comes to Dolly putting a pacifier in her mouth and whether or not you can use it going forward?
We'll go and wash it and sanitize it for sure. It has to be washed and sanitized. Got to keep
it
safe.
So you use it again. Okay, that's what I would do.
Yeah, I mean, if she like ate it and destroyed it, then no. But if she just popped it in her mouth, like she didn't do anything to it, really, because she's a baby, just like Lola. So she was just sucking on it. And yeah, we just washed it off and back to Lola.
Yeah. Well, you know, you and I are on the same page with that one. I mean, that's one of those ones where, you know, that not enough dogs, not enough babies, where everyone will be fine if you wash it off and sanitize it and then, you know, Lola uses it again. So way to go.
Thanks, man. All right. We got a robust response to our chatter about baseball songs. I'm going to rip a couple off here from the tweets, but also a weird connection. I wrote about a baseball song in the year 2010, coincidentally enough, about Steven Strasburg. This gentleman by the name of Steven Wynn wrote a song called Phenom as part of the baseball project. The song ran on ESPN.com at the time. So really weird intersection of things. But there you go. My relation to a baseball song. Tricky Henderson suggested the baseball project. His favorite was a song called Bill Lee. Scott Mitchell says, move over here, babe. Here comes Henry, one of his favorites. Our pal Amy Chapman, she writes, go get him, Tigers. She also says, sadly, my Mets had a horrible one in 86. I won't even link to it.
She's ashamed of it.
Yeah. And then Dan Prong said, love the topic about baseball songs. Our family favorite is Hondo Hurricane by Terry Cashman. It has many references to great names of the past. My sons are 4, 8, and 10 and love hearing the cool names that players used to go by. So everyone really excited about baseball songs. Who knew?
Yeah, I wish that it'd be fun to play like some of these extensively and just drop them in, but we can't.
Yeah, we're a little short on time. Yeah, these are all great suggestions.
And well, it's not only about time, but we literally are restricted from playing songs, right? By rule, we'd like it would be a situation as it was explained to me on in a few years ago. Like if we played like a song for more than like 5 seconds, mm-hmm. then what would happen at that point is that we'd have to like write a check for $20,000.
Right. We keep it very brief with the snippets we play on here. So check all of those out. Search hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter if you want to find the names of these. We've got a couple voicemails over here.
Hi, Buster. It's Tim Richardson here from Marlborough in the UK. Absolutely love your show. A real highlight of my week, 3 times a week. Absolutely superb. I've got a question re the pitching injuries. Do you think the tightening of the sticky substance rules could actually be contributing more than people are really letting on? It strikes me with less sticky, the pitchers need to put more effort through their arm to get close to their old pitching level. Hope you play this question. Thank you very much. Bye for now.
Well, and I appreciate the kind words for sure. I know someone who agrees with you, Tyler Glasnow, who when he had his injury broke down a couple of years ago, and when we talked to Jorge, he made reference to this. Tyler Glasnow basically came out and said as much as what you said. He went out, Tyler did, he pitched a game essentially naked with his fingers. He didn't have anything on his hands, and he said the next day when he picked up a baseball, he could not believe how sore he was because he had to grip the ball tighter with his fingers. He had to, you know, hold it differently. It was something that they weren't used to. So yeah, I think that's one of many factors. I think that's what bothered me most about Tony Clark's statement, Taylor, was that it just like, it's the pitch clock. Oh, stop. Like everybody knows it's a lot more complicated than that. What did you make of it?
Unbelievable. Are you kidding me? I mean, you
also unanimous. I mean, my God, if you listen to the podcast, you know, well, no, Zach Eflin just told us he loves it. And if I walk into any clubhouse, 80-90% of the players would tell me they love the pitch clock.
We did a whole feature on it. Everyone had positive. I don't get it. What planet is Tony Clark living on? Let's go to the next voicemail here.
Hey, Buster. This is Gabe from Seattle. Please tell me why I shouldn't freak out about my Seattle Mariners.
Gabe, here's a couple reasons, and they don't actually have anything to do with the Mariners. The Astros off to a slow start. My favorite stat going into Sunday's game was it was the first game in Alex Bregman's career. Think about this, Taylor. First game in Bregman's career in which the team was 5 games under .500 or worse.
Whoa.
That's his entire career. That's how successful they've been. They're kind of sluggish right now. They're working through some issues, and I think eventually they'll get it together. But, you know, as a stalking horse, they're not up to a great start. The Texas Rangers are going to have to wait. We talked about how they're going to have to play a little rope-a-dope this year. They got a great offense, but you know what? Max Scherzer is not going to be back until late May. Jacob deGrom, who I talked to this weekend, he's not going to be back until sometime around the deadline. So there's time for the Mariners to get it together. Might not be a satisfying answer, but I think you have to look at divisional context.
Hi, Buster and Taylor. This is John calling from Broomfield, Colorado. I have a question for you. What is the deal with people wearing hats for their teams that are not their team colors? Also, my big pet peeve is, what is it with people leaving the shiny sticker on the bill of the hat?
All right, Taylor, you take that one.
I mean,
you know me, I feel like I'm not qualified to answer. You, on the other hand, always wearing the Orioles cap as we do the show.
I've come around on like the alternate, like not your team color hats. I have a nice olive Orioles hat that I really enjoy. It's just a cool baseball cultural thing. I like that you can go to a ballpark and see a wide variety of hats for the same thing, same team. I think that's really cool. I think the sticker thing is a little bit weird. I know that's also, you know, a thing that people do. But for me, it's like leaving the tag on your shirt and walking around with it.
Yeah, I'd say this, like my favorite cap, I've got this great collection of caps. I've told you that during the lockout, during the negotiations of 2020, I stopped wearing baseball caps, okay? Because the negotiations just disgusted me about the short and six. So I haven't worn baseball caps since then. But if I did wear one cap, it was a St. Patrick's Day version of the Detroit Tigers cap. All green. Yeah, it was a beautiful cap, and that's one I'm like, oh man, I wish I could. Like some days I just would like to wear the cap, but I decided I'm going to wait till I'm done covering the sport.
Not even around the house or like when you're throwing the ball with Quinny outside?
No, I haven't. I've got them all down in the crawl space. Have these bins of hats, and I had like 60 of them, all these great hats with all the teams in baseball.
Oh man, I would love to see your hat collection, Buster.
You got to be a possum crawling into underneath our house.
All right, let's go to, we got two more tweets. We got two tweets here. Donnie Criswell Jr. here writes, and as of writing this, the whole NL Central is 500 or better. Is it actually the most underrated division in baseball?
I think it's underrated in terms of how competitive it's going to be, but that's not what you're asking me. You're thinking that it's better than what we thought. I'm not ready to say that yet.
And last one for the show, Zach Beeson, our pal, Zach Beeson 22. He writes, Buster, can you give us any positive comments or bright spots for the Athletics? I'll go first. JJ Bleday,
He's a Vanderbilt guy. Okay. So he's speaking to the choir here.
Yeah. So JJ Bleday has higher batting average, hits, OPS war with less strikeouts and a lower swing and miss rate than Ronald Acuna Jr. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there are great individual stories with the A's players, but the way the franchise being run, I still don't get it. You know, I sent a tweet out over the weekend. I talked with people within individual teams that are as disgusted as fans are. But, you know, here's the thing. The owners voted unanimously to approve the A's to go into this mess. What I wish that Major League Baseball would do is basically go to John Fisher and say, we're buying the team from you. And then we're going to take the franchise and then have them basically put it up for bids from different cities and say, you know what, go ahead. If you're Sacramento, put in a bid. If you're Oakland, put in a bid. If you're Las Vegas, put in a bid. Whoever gives us the best ballpark deal, that's where we're going. What do you think?
I love that idea, and it makes me sad. Did you see John Fisher when he was, you know, in his Sacramento press conference? Yes. He was like, I can't wait to watch Aaron Judge hit home runs here. He couldn't name one player on his own team. Like, what a detached loser. God.
Yeah, I didn't take that one as personally because I think he was talking more about the excitement of baseball. But at this point, he just doesn't have credibility. And, you know, the whole idea, you move into a ballpark where you've got 14,000 capacity and 4,000 of it are people sitting on the grass. You know, I mean, it's not a major league facility, and the A's are not going to put out a major league product for many years to come. I had one official say to me that they're going to have no choice because they're not going to have any revenue stream. They're basically going to just tank for the next 5 years. They've already been tanking in the last couple of years. It's just going to be terrible. Like, why would the other owners sit back and let that happen?
I've also seen some people being like,
"Hey, at the end, I mean, we just say on this podcast today, we just ripped everybody."
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's what podcasts are for, right? Ripping people with minimal accountability. I'll also say I've seen people like, oh, you know, it'll be fun to see major league games in a AAA park. It'll be fun when you're watching on TV. It will not be any fun for A's fans. So let's be clear about that. Bad vibes for the athletes.
No, and how about going there to Sacramento and not having the city's name attached to the team? It's just the whole thing is really so unseemly, and it reflects so badly on all the owners. I don't understand why they let it happen.
All right, well, that's it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. The number for the voicemail line is 406-404-8460. It's in the show notes. Thanks for writing it and calling in. We have so many voicemails coming in.
The popular number. It's a popular number being called.
Yeah, and I love it, and I'm so sorry. You know, we played 3 tonight. I mean, we must have gotten 20 over the last couple of days, so don't be distressed. Keep calling in. I listen to all of them. I read all of your tweets as well, and I will say we had a young listener call in from Southern California with an 805 number asking a question about the Blue Jays. The connection was bad, but we'd love to hear your question again, young listener with the 805 area code. So please call in again.
Well, that was really nice of you to say, to specify, to pick him out. That was cool of you to do that, Taylor. All right. Thanks to Taylor. Thanks to Sarah. Thanks to Jorge. Thanks to Eduardo. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.